one of the AMO version. So it's there.
Yeah. I was saying, I think that this.
So it's not lost, whatever you do with AMO section.
So we take section one out of that bill and section two out of the A engrossed, and then we switch over to center ambulance.
Yeah.
Which becomes section three and four.
Yeah, and then you go back to four again.
Okay, now I want to move a little more slowly on this, because I think I'm, would you go through that again, what you're suggesting?
Section one is what people seem to agreed on, out of the A engrossed should stay in the bill.
Okay.
That becomes a policy statement.
Right.
Section two, everybody seems to want the long list of things that are there.
The study, right.
Section three now becomes section one.
That's it, in the dash eight.
Of the dash eight amendments.
Okay. Yes.
And section two becomes four. Medical provider.
This is already in the bill.
No, her sections one and two are section three.
Three. But, wait, but slightly changed.
I think.
Ann, maybe you can help us here. Okay?
Okay, section three of the A engrossed.
Okay.
Has four sections, four subsections.
Right.
Section one, it matches section one of the A and, of the.
Dash eight, okay.
Section two, subsection two, yes, section two of A, oh, this is too hard to say.
All right, you're just going to renumber down and eliminate that as a section.
Picking up.
Well, okay, I'm a little confused here, because if we're saying that section one in the dash eight is the same as section three, I don't see anything here about the first trimester. And that's the, that's.
No, that's the new part.
Okay, so that would be the language added in.
There's two changes in between Senator Handy's dash eight and section three of the engrossed.
Okay.
One is that we, in lines 80, oh, whoops, I don't have my bill. And here's the bill. Lines 14 and 15 of page 4 of the A engrossed bill, we have said, uses drug and alcohol in such a manner as to be at risk of adversely affecting the fetus, which is slightly different language, and I think that's consistent with what Holly and what and Judy were saying about specifying, we're not only talking about abuse, but even the use of, casual use of alcohol, even like two drinks a week can be a problem. The other change is the first trimester, and that could be inserted in line 18, where you'd say the attending healthcare provider during the first trimester or as soon thereafter as possible shall perform a. And then the other change is that we have, in the A engrossed version, it says detailed risk assessments on line 18 and 19, where Senator Handy's version only says risk assessment rather than detailed risk assessment.
Okay, so we've left that detailed.
We want to leave the detail out.
Right, right.
Could I ask at this point, getting back to this risk assessment, which shall include an assessment for drug and alcohol usage, is the doctor in any position to do anything more than ask the individual about drug or alcohol use without the patient's consent? Can the doctor do any test that would establish drug or alcohol use? And does this imply that the doctor shall?
Kevin, you want to speak to that?
Christine's probably better.
Please introduce yourself.
Jim Carlson, representing the Oregon Medical Association. A physician cannot do a urinalysis test, for example, without the informed consent of the patient. A study that was recently published in the New England Journal of Medicine and also the Kaiser study indicate a reluctance of somebody, if they are using drugs, to consent to such a test oftentimes. And so actually what you're talking about in a risk assessment is a discussion between the provider and the patient on if they use drugs. Both of these studies have indicated a high number of false responses to the providers amongst those patients who are using drugs. In the 25% to 50% of the time, they'll probably lie about their drug use if they are using drugs. So I think it's important that we read some, or put some language in defining a little bit on what this risk assessment should consist of to facilitate that discussion. But short of giving or requiring providers to do a mandatory year analysis, that's really all a provider can do.
Christine, would you come forward, please? Thank you.
Chair Peterson.
Representative Hanley.
Once again, we get the New England Journal of Medicine, the People Magazine, and the medical profession in to the record.
Go ahead, Christine.
Well, I think we are probably getting somewhat confused among risk assessment and confirming tests, and then when a referral is made. If I understand the language correctly, a provider, and remember, not just talking about physicians, we're talking about nurse midwives and other providers who are caring for these women, assess the possibility of risk, and that might include questions, but it might also include their observations and their evaluation of the answers given. As I read this statute, they not only are free to, but are encouraged to make a referral on the basis of that risk evaluation. That might mean that although the patient answered no to all the questions, the provider would say, I understand that you've just told me that you haven't had a drink since 3 months before you got pregnant and that you've never touched substances, but watching your behavior and seeing what I see, I would still encourage you to follow up on this referral and go down the hall and visit with these other people who know something. And I believe that can be done without the urinalysis. I think Mr. Carlson's right. You cannot, under the present view of testing for drug and alcohol, order that test as a part of a routine urinalysis. I would add that in getting a consent for a routine urinalysis, the physician rarely details exactly which tests are going to be done. And I do think some providers, in fact, add some drug screens on those tests without explicitly calling it out in some settings. But I don't think that's recommended. And I do think he's right that ordering specific drug and alcohol screens without explicit informed consent would be very difficult in today's world.
Well, Madam Chairman, the question I have is, if we understand that there are those legal limitations on the ability of the doctor, does the language "a risk assessment which shall include an assessment for drug and alcohol usage" suggest at all that the doctor is directed to go beyond what the doctor is legally permitted to do under present statutes?
My guess is that absent a specific phrase that said including chemical tests, including urinalysis, if the physician feels it is warranted, that most providers would not feel that this expands their right to order those specific chemical tests. That's my sense. I wouldn't want to try and say
as long as it's, I think, clear on the record that legislative intent is such that the legislature does not want physicians to do anything but go beyond having that discussion with their patients and try to make those observations and have that discussion to determine if there is alcohol or drug use.
So with that understanding, the term risk assessment, which shall include assessment for drug and alcohol, would be acceptable because there's no suggestion that this is directed to do for a doctor or any other provider to do anything beyond what the law now permits.
I'm going to try and get us all to agree.
Okay,
folks, we've got, 10 minutes or less. I want to see if we can come to some agreement on which sections where so that staff can prepare the final bill for us tomorrow. Now, as I understand, and Art and Ann, you might have to help me here, we've agreed that we're going to accept Section 1 out of A and Gross, okay?
With some amended language
that we have all agreed to, okay? Section 2 out of A and Gross, we are also accepting with...
Within the funds available.
Right, within the funds available language.
Okay. Senator Robertson.
Okay. Section 3, we are going back to the dash 8 with... Yeah, with the amendments on Section 2 that Senator Bradbury and Senator Roberts suggested.
And that becomes Section 3, right?
And that will become
the
Section 3.
The amendments in Section 2 becomes Section 3.
Right.
With some language, okay?
Okay. Section 4 engrossed, Section 5, as it is engrossed, Section 6. Yes?
Section 4, you probably want to add in something about subject to the availability
of the grant, yes.
And come back to the E-Board.
Right.
If additional money is needed.
Would you do that there, or would you do that when you deleted the appropriation in Section 7?
Wouldn't you have a dollar?
And talked about the emergency.
Well, yeah, we talked about putting a dollar in there, and I don't know the technicalities here, which way would work best. It doesn't matter.
I'd make a section.
Section to the emergency.
I don't know what it is. Do you have a mind either way?
Either way.
Do it in Section 7, is the language that you were thinking?
In Section 7, you can say that Section 4 is the only opportunity there.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Let's assume that. Okay.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Okay.
And somehow the others are going to get a $1 of federal funds? Is that what it is right now?
General.
General fund?
General fund as well as.
One general.
One federal.
Okay, that's the way you want to go. So you get grants and then leave it open to the.
Right. Well, that, as far as you're concerned, is to do it. Okay.
Is that sort of how you want it?
Yeah. Okay, are we there, Representative Hamlin?
Just a comment. So I didn't mix up policy statement with non-policy statement. The original A engrossed bill, pages 1 and 2 through line 33, was never intended, even in the original bill, to be a part of the ORS.
That's my understanding.
So it doesn't.
Preparatory.
And Senator Hamby's testimony was directed against not including those sections?
Well, she hedged a little, but it was, she didn't feel it was real important, and she left it up to the committee, but no, she didn't know.
But it wasn't a part anyway.
Right.
Okay. But we do, if I understand you correctly, do want to include a policy statement.
Which is.
And that is Section 1.
Exactly.
Okay.
Good. Okay.
I'm not sure about this. If the Health Division doesn't have money to collect data, would you say shall include any data?
Oh, okay, yeah. Ann, why don't you bring that up? Line 15 on page 5.
Section 6.
Section 6.
Has to do with a report submitted by DHR, and it requires the Health Division to include any data collected, which may or not, may not be funded, in which case, if it's not funded, they won't have any data. So possibly just adding the word any.
Then go back to Jeanette Hamby's section, which just requires a report.
3, we have data. It refers back to that data we're collecting from the doctors.
So you will have some data, and this doesn't distinguish how full or complete.
Yeah, okay. This doesn't refer back to the prevalence data, the urine prevalence data. It refers back to the data collected from providers under Section 3.
All right, if there's no objection, Representative Hamlin.
That data is anonymous, not confidential.
That's correct.
Okay. There's no objection, we will ask staff to bring back a cleaned-up version tomorrow, and we will pass this out first thing tomorrow. Okay.
Senator Hamby should also be in the meeting.
Right.
33.7, before you get to that.
What do we have to do? Oh.
No.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten. A name change, we have a.
33.47.
33.47 is a name change that Bev Stein's subcommittee had talked about in terms of the youth. The Oregon Youth Services Commission was the name given somewhere along in the process. They had discussion, but it was in another bill, and it was sort of after the fact. They would like it changed to State Community Children and Youth Services Commission, which is a real heavy-duty moniker. My feeling is if they do the work, I don't care what they call themselves.
Would it fit on stationery?
Is there anyone here from, I saw David Fuchs in the audience a while ago.
I can speak.
Melanie, could you speak to that, the importance of this change, or?
Not long.
Why you want a longer name?
For the record, Melanie Zimmer, Housing and Resources Committee Administrator. As you had mentioned in the original bill that you had talked about yesterday, 3466, the relating clause wouldn't allow us to change the name. Since we're bringing in children from ages 0 to 6, we wanted the name children in the name of the commission. As a matter of fact, for your information, and I don't know if you want to deal with this, Representative Stein would really like the name of the commission to be the Oregon Children and Youth Community Services Commission.
Instead of state.
Instead of state. She thought that sounded too heavy and that Oregon sounded friendlier.
It does. Nice. Sounds much better. Oregon Community Children and Youth Services Commission. That still involves the state, pulls in the community, children and youth.
It's got everything in it.
And can it get on the stationery as Representative Van Lee does?
Depends on the size of the font. On
the Oregon Community Children and Youth Services Commission.
I don't mean to get into discussion about this, but what's wrong with Oregon Youth Services Commission?
Doesn't include children or the word community, right?
Correct.
Oh.
Oh. And the lights went on.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, is there...
Before you do it, I want to make sure there's nothing wrong with the acronym. Oh,
that's embarrassing.
It's sort of not an acronym.
What does it come out to be?
Nothing.
OCCYS.
OCCYS. It's not obnoxious.
It's not obnoxious, but it's not.
It's not good.
It's not a good
it's
one.
It's not as easy to say as CSD.
That's right.
Is there objection to sending out this amended House Bill, A. and Gross, 3347?
I'll move it.
Representative Hanlon moves
it. Did we amend the bill?
Yeah.
We did, okay. To Oregon.
Yeah. Right.
The bill is amended?
Fine. I've asked for
the final time. Okay, that's passed the full committee. Thank you for your good work today. We are adjourned.
And we'll let that travel.
And the reason I came was that material never got.
The subcommittee will come to order. We are going to take a few minutes in the beginning here and deal with House Bill 2480, which has to do with foster care. And this comes from the House Human Resources Committee. And Art, if you could give us a little background on this one.
Sure. I'll try to do an overview, and also people from Children's Services Division is here if you have questions, and risk management are both here. But it's a bill that came out of the discussion that the governor had with a lot of foster parents about what some of their needs were. And one of those was to be able to extend the liability for damages that foster children to do in their homes beyond those things that were just that could be determined as being willful. And because there's some younger, emotionally disturbed, and very mentally disturbed children in those homes, and the courts find it very difficult to determine that. About 37% of the claims that come in by foster parents where there has been real damage has been denied under the present ORS. What this does is extend the ORF to broaden it so that other types of claims can be covered and not rejected. When you did your add-back list and your priority list, the $20.1 million under specialized foster care, you included an amount of $50,000 in general fund to fund House Bill 2480. So the funding is covered, and it's a matter of your wishing to extend in ORF the kinds of coverage for damage and liability that occur. You have a letter from Bill Thomas, the administrator of CSD, explaining it, and you have representatives from CSD and Risk Management here this morning.
Who is here from CSD? Is Bill Thomas in the audience?
I'm here from CSD.
Monty McLaren.
Monty, could you come forward for a moment, please? It's late in the session, and I haven't really looked at this bill. I guess the question I have is, what would actually happen? We have the money in the budget. What would happen if this bill were not passed?
The present statute does not allow for any payment of damages a child does unless they're intentional, willful, or malicious. If the bill passes, this would broaden this to allow payment for any damages done by a foster child that were found to be confirmed by Risk Management Division. Again, it would extend this coverage because at the present time there are a number of children, as Mr. Wilkinson explained, under 6 years of age who do a great deal of damage to foster parent property, and there is no coverage. As a result of that, we have a difficult time because foster parents have to pay this cost out of their pocket, and it does not help us retain foster homes.
Representative Van Blue.
Was there any discussion in the division with other parts of the Human Resource Department for the same kind of coverage that ought to be extended to other providers also if you were to go this particular route as a principal?
I'm not aware of any discussion other than foster parents themselves.
Okay, are there further questions, concerns from subcommittee members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hill.
I'd like to state my support for the bill. A lot of foster parents have kids that are difficult, have been through hard times, been abused, and often act out or destructive in their behavior and cause a lot of damage. And a bill like this is necessary if we're going to encourage people to be foster parents and to take these difficult kids, these very difficult kids. Otherwise, we'll have no place to place these kids. This is really a minimal level of protection I think we really need.
Senator Hill moves House Bill 2480 to full committee. Is there objection or discussion?
Madam Chair, I'll let it go out of the committee, but I want to check into the long range of repercussions in order to be fair to other providers. If that seems like a public policy, I may speak against it.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Roberts.
I was just say to the representative, in the meantime, why not cover these children?
Well, it's either give it to everybody or
none. None at all?
Yeah.
Okay, are there any objections whatsoever?
I have some concerns, but I'm not going to object.
Okay. So noted, we will move this to full committee. Thank you. Yeah, I guess we're ready to move into
34-70.
Yeah, 34-70. I would like to make a statement for the audience before we begin this. Ways and Means is not a policy-making committee. We deal with budgets and with fiscal problems related to a particular bill. This is not an open public hearing today. I'm going to be hearing from Representative Burton concerning some technical amendments. We are not dealing with any additional information other than that at this point. And the philosophy here is that everyone, we would hope, had their opportunity at the substantive committee at the numerous hearings that were held there. So we are dealing with just some technical amendments and with the fiscal with fiscal matters. I would like to extend an apology to some of you people who drove for a long distance. Evidently, there was some misinformation that this would be an open hearing with various kinds of public testimony today. I apologize for that, that information was given to you incorrectly. There are some handouts today from some of you folks that I will pass out. In fact, we could take a moment and do that. This is from the Oregon Pro-Gun Civil Rights Lobby, and there are a couple different forms, so the members will at least have that. Representative Burton, are you ready to come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Mike Burton, District 17, and one of the chief co-sponsors of House Bill 3470. The amendments that we presented to you are the result of the working group that's been working on this bill for some time, including members of the law enforcement agencies, cities, counties, and various individuals representing the gun lobby.
Excuse me, Representative Burton, that's the dash 17.
The amendments that I have, dated 6/20/89.
Okay, those are being handed out at this moment.
And Senator Hill has been a participant in these meetings.
Hill?
Mike, just let me confirm, we're working off the Engross version, the dash 17 or 2. Engross version of House Bill 3470. Just very quick background to this bill. In the interim, this past interim, I was approached by various individuals, including law enforcement agencies, regarding, as chairman of the Subcommittee on criminal law and corrections of the judiciary, was approached by various individuals and law enforcement agencies about the difficulties that law enforcement agencies were having in verifying authenticity, if you would, for issuance of permits and for the sale of guns and handguns in the state. The request at that point was for an increase in the waiting period for the purchase of handguns. I had some hearings around that, and in the process of those hearings, it was pretty evident to me that there was a number of problems on both sides of the issue of purchase of firearms in the state of Oregon. I sat down with a speaker at the beginning of the session and asked that all parties involved in this be brought to the table and to come up with some legislation that would help resolve a number of issues, and I think that the bill that's in front of you does that. You have some handouts from us that talks about the outline of the bill, and Madam Chair, in keeping with your earlier comments, I won't go through that because I think the purpose of this is there. Unless somebody specifically wants some information, I'd be glad to respond to that. These amendments, and we can walk through those. Corey here with me is someone who has been working as staff on this, and we can talk about these. These amendments basically, they're probably the only really, well, there's some changes regarding the status of a person who would be eligible for to purchase firearms given their record regarding alcohol convictions and this sort of thing is there. But particularly there is a Section 38 added to the bill, which is a preemption clause which has been agreed upon by law enforcement and the cities and counties, which talks about the regulation of possession of firearms in public places. That is added in there. The other ones, Corey, perhaps you could, just for the record, go through those very quickly with us. As I say, most of these are technical amendments unless there's something specific.
Yeah. Representative Burton, maybe I'm going to have you try again on Section 38. That's a preemption for, this is page 3.
Page 3 of your amendment, Section 38. Cities and counties and political subdivisions of the state may regulate possession of firearms and ammunition in public places as defined by ORS 161.015. Effectively, that means that the state law in all other cases is the law that is predominant. So discharging firearms inside of a city limits and that sort of thing, which are the other exemptions, would stand. The regulation of businesses that may sell those as a business license activity of a city, and that remains. But otherwise, this becomes the law of the state, if you will.
That is a reminder more than anything.
I think so. That's right.
This is the floor, and somebody can actually have tougher laws in the city if they want it. But this becomes the base.
No, the other way.
No, it's the other way around.
The other way around.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hill.
Is the intent, and Corey, is the intent to not allow tougher laws in a city? That is, a city can't prohibit the ownership of guns, for instance.
That's right.
Shouldn't there be, I'm just questioning the technical structure of that section, shouldn't there be a word only in there? Shouldn't, again, I'm not questioning the policy, I'm just questioning how it's written. Shouldn't it say something like, except as otherwise provided by law, cities, counties, and other political subdivisions of this state may only regulate the possession of firearms and ammunition in a public place.
The Legislative Council drafted these, and I see your point, Senator. Do you recall?
That is the intent. That's
it is the intent, yes.
It is the intent. This language was produced after much deliberations, and each word was deliberately placed. I'm not sure if only was changed in the cities or not.
Virginia Vanderbilt from Legislative Council, is that anything you could address?
Well, you can insert only. I don't think that it's really essential to insert only. By specifically saying, except as otherwise provided, this is what they can do, and specifying that one particular area, I don't think that the only is necessary. It can be inserted if that's...
It makes it a little more clear to me that it's a restriction rather than, that it's a ceiling rather than a floor. And that's a question the chair asks, is floor a ceiling? And if we put the word only in there, it makes it more clear that this is a ceiling.
Yeah, I don't have strong feelings one way or the other about this, as long as it's on the record.
Senator's comfortable with that, why that would be certainly acceptable to us.
I'd certainly want Corey to be comfortable with that, too. Corey's representing the speaker.
Are committee members of the opinion that would help clarify?
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Could I ask for a response from one member of the audience? I see John Nichols of the Rifle and Pistol Association. Just John, could you nod yes or no if inserting only is consistent with your understanding? Is inserting the word only consistent with your understanding of the intent? It is.
Okay. Senator Hill moves that we add the word only.
Right. On line 27, Madam Chair, after May. And that's a technical amendment. It's not intended to change what it accomplishes.
Okay, please go ahead,
sir. The other thing, I'd just like to make a statement for the record, even though it's not specifically in the bill, there is in the legislation, there is an issue raised in Section 8 which talks about limiting liability of the sheriffs and limiting liability of state police in a case of a negligence of checking the record for someone in purchase of the firearms. There's not a specific liability exemption for local police enforcement. That is the intent.
These sorts of problems. I have...
Well, then you are providing it. So if we say provide, we're that's a more flexible language. Anything wrong with that?
I mean, I think we're just, you know, in terms
splitting
of...
Splitting hairs.
Yeah, splitting hairs in terms of choosing a word. The language, trying to fit it in the language here is a little awkward. One thing I'd say first, I guess my preference would be to say is encouraged as opposed to shall continue, but simply getting at what Senator Bradbury was saying. But if you say the OHSU shall continue to integrate drug and alcohol abuse assessment and treatment education into its medical school curriculum, it might flow a little more smoothly than the way the language was.
Okay,
here.
Lois, would you say that one more time?
The Oregon Health Sciences University shall continue to integrate drug or provide, but I had integrate drug and alcohol abuse assessment and treatment education into its medical school curriculum.
After you've got all that complicated language down, let me suggest a much simpler change.
Okay, go ahead.
Just strike out the words establish and insert the word have.
Yeah, there we go. Shall have an integrated curriculum. Well, that's not much different from provide.
Well, again...
The word have includes the possibility of establishing plus the possibility of just continuing to have what they have now.
I'm sure I'd make that as a motion.
Okay.
I think it does a trick and we should move on.
Representative Lee, okay, is there any objection to that motion? Shall have an integrated curriculum?
We do what we want in higher ed anyway.
Right. I'm not going to sit here and say that.
Okay, any opposition to that? No. Okay, and you needed to take us through a couple more things, and then Senator Hill, I'll get back to you.
The next major change comes in Section 9, where $1 was added to the general fund, from the general fund. It says that the appropriation is for the Department of Human Resources. I believe the appropriation should go to the Health Division.
Okay. I have a question, Section 7.
Okay.
That leaves out cigarettes.
The reference in Section 7.
Or other substances with abuse potential.
Okay, well, that's a catch-all. So
yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator Roberts.
The reference on page 2, section 2, says the Department of Human Resources shall study within the resources of the department. So
it's not just the Health Division.
It really doesn't matter, does it? The section 9 and 10. I don't really know.
That goes to the, I would assume that goes to the director's office, wouldn't you? And then it'd be transferred down.
I don't know when, what happens if you put it in human resources, what that means with reference to, can they then have those sums?
Well.
I don't know.
Yeah, where does the grant application, I mean, who does the grant application? Is it the health?
Health division.
Health division is the grant application. Should this reference then to the study back there been to the health division rather than Department of Human Resources?
I don't think so, because this goes into a more of a cross-agency study.
The study does, yeah.
Trying to pull together all the agencies that have some involvement in drug education.
Yeah, I remember that wasn't then when you got to the appropriation, just to the health division.
Well, the study they're doing within their own limited budget, whatever that is. But this one, I mean...
It might give them some more money for that limited budget. That's what this... Section well, we'll 9 and 10 is
you can thing. You can be assured the health division will squawk if they figure that it's being siphoned off by some other area.
Well,
yeah.
Is this a big issue?
Madam Chair, in Section 9, we will apply for the grant. It's probably appropriate to put our name in Section 2. I think the department is fine.
Executive is saying probably health department.
That's correct.
Okay, let's put health department in
health
line
division,
6, section 9, or health division.
Resources.
Yeah. Okay.
I think section 5 back on page 4, line 25, also ought to be health division. The pilot projects, which are what the federal grant application is for.
Section 5, line 25, subject to the availability of federal funds, the health division shall design and place in operation. Two pilot projects. Okay, I'm seeing some head nodding. Okay.
Back on section 10 adds the federal fund limitation of $1. Probably make that change to the health division.
Health division. Okay. Okay. I would assume that Senator Hamby would carry this in full committee on the Senate side, and I'd like to carry it on the House side. Senator Hill.
Okay, on Section 5, I think we need a language change to make it consistent with the rest of the bill, and that's on line 29. We should strike mothers, comma, fetuses, and insert pregnant and postpartum women and their. That makes it consistent with the rest of the bill.
That's the language that's been used in other places.
That's correct. So to be pregnant and postpartum women and there. And then at the end of line 29, strike by pregnant and then line 30, women.
I've lost you there. What?
On line 29 of page 4, strike the words mothers, fetuses, and insert pregnant and postpartum women and there.
Infants. And their infants, right.
And then at the end of that line, strike by pregnant women, because it's redundant.
From substance abuse, period.
Yeah, you. Then we'll have consistent reference to the women.
Okay,
and
so that would read, to alleviate the health-related problems of pregnant and postpartum women and their infants which arise from substance use.
And then one more change, Madam Chair, on page 5, line 23. And I think this is a... Just once again for consistency, strike children and insert infants, because the pilot program is intended for pregnant and postpartum women and their infants, and this gives reference to children, which implies kids older than infant stage. So.
And infants has been used in throughout.
Yeah, so it's consistency again and clarity.
Okay. Okay, any concerns with those changes? All right, do I have a motion to send this to full committee as amended? Okay, Representative Van Vliet moves it to full committee as amended by the subcommittee. Any objections? Okay, if not, we are adjourned.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good job.
No. Okay, we're adjourned.
We're adjourned.
one. It is not.
Okay, the Subcommittee on Human Resources will come to order. You'll have to excuse us if this is a little strange today. We learned.
Call the treasurer to order.
Right. We learned after we passed out 3277 and 3280 on mobile homes that we can't legally add a emergency clause to any bill dealing with raising taxes or fees or revenues. And legislative council missed that. Everyone missed it. So what I'm asking us to do today is just take out the emergency clause.
I move we take out the emergency clauses.
Okay. Does everybody understand what's going on here?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Any complication? Okay. So moved by Senator Roberts. Is there any objection? Okay. Note that there were two senators and two representatives, and I assume this will not have to go back to full committee.
Unfortunately, it will.
It will. Okay. All right. It will move back to full committee. Thank you very much. And that's how
well,
we
took too long a recess.
That's not your fault.
No, I don't do that.